and welcome to another episode of La Pausa Pod. Myself and Jamie here with you today to take you through some stats on La Liga, and we're going to talk about Stats Corner as we always do. We're going to talk through the top three winter arrivals. We've kind of gone down the route of picking players who aren't necessarily signings, but we just used the word arrival. So to break this down, we picked three, and then we've got another few who sprang to mind who we've kind of thought have played well. And then we're going to just take a look at Atletico Madrid versus Almeria at the weekend and try to make sense of Almeria's situation and Atletico's situation a little bit. But yeah, Almeria look almost destined for relegation now, but we're not that convinced that they're as bad as the record suggests. So yeah, we're going to get into that at the end, have a chat about that. But to begin, as always, we're going to kick off with Stats Corner, three interesting stats that we found in La Liga. Do you want to kick off with your first one, Jamie?
Yeah, it takes a bit of framing this one as well, because I'm not big on just totals. You know, we always try to use penalty averages and stuff. But anyway, so Ilkay Gundogan, five chances created against Getafe, which takes him to 100 for the season. And he's the first player in Europe's big five leagues this season to do that across all competitions. Obviously, a nice round number. First to the post on that one. But yeah, we should caveat that by saying 30 of those were from set pieces. But again, we should cut him some slack as well, because we know he's played deeper this season, deeper than I think he would have liked to, out of necessity for the team. And his open play numbers are still really good, to be fair. So yeah, his 70 open play chances created are the third most in Europe, behind only Florian Wirtz and Phil Foden. And even if you do per 90, he's 2.1 chances created per 90 from open play, which is still really good among central and attacking midfields in Europe. So yeah, we've not really spoken too much about Barcelona players excelling this season, but Gundogan is probably a guy we should give some credit to in what's an otherwise pretty difficult situation at the moment.
He has been one of the bright spots, even though, as you said, a lot of the positive news from Barcelona has been drowned out by the results, by falling behind in La Liga by so much. Ilkay Gundogan is 33 now, years of age, and it'll be interesting to see where the new manager sees him playing. I actually wrote about this at the start of the season and thought that his best position was, and his best trait was, his ingenuity in around the box. We've seen that. This is where this stat comes from. But obviously, it's going to depend massively on the new manager. There's been a talk, obviously, a couple of German managers, Tuchel, Nagelsmann. If it is a more vertical game that they're going to play, I wonder, will Gundogan fit into that? So, chance from open play, he leads La Liga with 49 in total. Isco is second, and Oyun Sanset is third. So Isco is 42. He's been injured now for a couple of weeks and will be injured for another few more weeks. Sanset is 37. And yeah, so Gundogan, I'm really far ahead of the pack there too. So really good signing. Interesting little stat there from a player who, yeah, you just wonder how bad it might have gotten if they hadn't have signed Gundogan.
At the time, it didn't feel like he was a hugely necessary signing. I didn't think, obviously, if Gundogan is available, coming off winning a treble with Man City, you take him. But you didn't look at Barcelona's midfield and think they're absolutely dying for an extra midfielder. So yeah, it's a pretty good job they signed him, looking back now.
Yeah, so moving on, following his equaliser against Osasuna, Kirian Rodriguez has now scored more non-penalty goals than any other central or defensive midfielder in La Liga. Do you want to add your little caveat in there, Jamie, at the end?
Well, yeah, because some people will be screaming, what about Jude Bellingham at this point? But again, I underlined central or defensive midfielder, because if you've watched, you could have watched La Liga twice this season and known Jude Bellingham has not played. Very much like an orthodox central midfielder, he's been at times basically number nine. So again, a lot of his minutes this season are logged as an attacking midfielder, or occasionally on the left as well, and like I said, as a striker. So I think Kieran, to place him among players who he actually plays like, so you're talking guys like, he's just ahead of Isco and Sunset, Ivan Martin, guys like that. I think for him to be on 6 goals without any penalties, while basically being the conductor of the team, is pretty incredible, really. It feels like those two things shouldn't really go together.
He plays even slightly deeper than Isco and Ivan Martin, who you said. I know Ivan Martin has kind of dropped back slightly now in the last couple of weeks, but Kieran Rodriguez really is the base of that midfield, and those numbers are just an addition to what he adds in terms of control. I mean, even a few goals in a season will be amazing for him. So we're 23 games into the season now, and he has 6, so maybe he'll add one or two more. That's just an incredible season for him, really, when you consider everything he offers to this team.
Yeah, like you said, he's not an attacking midfielder by any means. At the weekend, he played as the deepest midfielder because Maxi Peroni wasn't there. So, and that's something he's done a lot this season. He's rotated between the deepest midfield position and then as more of a interior. To rack up 6 goals from that scenario is incredible. I can't remember how many of those have been from outside the box, actually, but they're all really good finishes as well. So just immense quality from him, whether it's as a passer, finisher. And if he can keep that up, I mean, he's going to be a real contender to stay in my overall team of the season. I put him in the half season one, but still work to do.
So moving on then to a team who played last night, bet Rayo Vallecano 3-0. Probably not as easy, perhaps, as the scoreline suggests, but in another way it was, because Girona, just Dobbik had a couple of chances that he just couldn't finish. There was one ball into the box, excellent, and he couldn't control it. They have bounced back now after 2 losses, which is more than 2 losses in their 2 games prior to the Rayo game, which was more losses than they had in La Liga. So a little bit of a test of their mentality to go to welcome Rayo with a new manager and beat them. So yeah, Michel said after the game that he wants Girona to go back to being the team that scores the most goals, and we saw that last night. They attacked, stuck to their plan. There's no doubt in that. And he said that their goal is Champions League football this year. So they're, in terms of teams in the bottom half of the league, they have played 14, won 13, and drawn 1, losing 0 of those games. So a whopping 40 points taken from a possible 42. And I guess you could scoff at Girona and say, oh, well, they're just beating up on lower teams and haven't actually beaten, which might be fair enough, but you still have to beat these teams. And I think that just shows that their style of play, their system works. And it's only against the teams at real quality that are able to go up against them and beat them. Like we saw them in the first game against Real Madrid, and Girona were well in that game, but just it was Real Madrid's quality and their chance-taking efficiency that beat them. So Girona are flat track bullies, but their system works.
Yeah, to me it's a good sign, because when they play against these lower half teams, they're more likely to sit back, and that presents a huge problem for a lot of good teams having to figure out ways to break them down. You think of a team like Real Sociedad at the moment, who just can't score to save their lives, even though their defense is still really good. They just can't find the breakthroughs, and Girona are just the opposite of that. They've, like you said, 40 points from 42 available, and it's not just that; it's the fact they've blown away a lot of these teams as well. 38 goals scored, 13 conceded, another 3 last night. It was a tough game. Michel said something I liked, actually, that in the first half when they were a bit nervous coming off 2 wins, he said, you know, with the fact we've come from 2 not too bad games, but obviously not picking up points. He felt like they wanted to, they were in too much of a rush to create chances before they'd actually started playing football. So in that first half, he saw a lot of passes given away uncharacteristically. But again, from there, once they got in at half time, a few corrections, tweaks of positions, they were just back to drone of that we've seen all season. So yeah, you don't want to be a bottom half time, bottom half side going to Montolivi at the moment.
Yeah, and they're starting to get players healthy now again. So Daley Blind is obviously still injured, and Yangel Herrera is back, and he had 15 of 22 duels. He won 15 of his 22 duels for last night against Rayo. Just an incredible performance from him. And we got a question on Twitter, someone asking us most duels won this season. And it is, I'm not entirely sure if they meant overall, which is what I've done, or whether they meant in a single game. Mikel Moreno has the most duels won, 199. And that's another total. And 105 of those are aerial duels. Mikel Moreno, just a monster in the air, really. Over half of his duels won are in the air. But
I was just going to say, actually, that was the third time this season Yangel has won 15 duels in a game, which was the only other player who's done it as many times was Mikel Moreno. So those two were just the, you know, the midfield beasts this season, the all-terrain footballers.
So the most duels won in a single game was Sergio Ruiz from Granada against Las Palmas. Jamie remembers that game specifically and can vouch. I don't remember the game, but Jamie says, yes, he was indeed very good. So that's the most duels won in a game. Yankel Herrera is 1-9 on that list. And yeah, he's actually had more than 15 himself, 16. Yankel Herrera, it's not even Yankel Herrera's top duels won in a game. He had 16 against Osasuna back in November. So now moving on to our next segment, it's top three winter arrivals. And we're very specific here about arrivals, not signings. And one of those is Pau Cubarsí from Barcelona, who's been getting all sorts of plaudits after his performance against Getafe in particular. But even before that, Xavi says he's the best Barcelona defender at bringing the ball out from the back. Robert Lewandowski says that, yes, he's excellent and had all sorts of plaudits for him too. So, yeah, Xavi obviously has announced he's leaving at the end of the season, and this is probably going to be one of the most important things that he's done at the club, is bringing Pau Cubarsí into the fold. I heard recently that he has a very low release clause and there's a lot of clubs looking at him, but bringing him into the first team and maybe proving to him that there is an avenue here for him to grow is really important. Three of the six youngest players to play across Europe's top five leagues this season are from Barcelona. So you've got Yamal, who is, we've spoken about him before, Cubarsí, and then Hector Fort, who has only played 97 minutes, but still, these three players, 17-year-olds, and just incredible. I mean, Cubarsí is only after turning 17. He's not even like at the other end of 17. He's still so young. So yeah, you've been impressed with him as well, Jamie.
Yeah, unbelievable, really. At his age, having just turned 17, you know, maybe it's the fact that there's a number of these really young players has kind of diluted the feeling a little bit. But yeah, you just have to remember how young they are. And especially playing Cubarsí's position, where I think we all can see pretty clearly that he's a special talent in terms of ball playing from the back. Some of the passes against Getafe where he's just shredding lines, zipping passes through gaps that you didn't really even see on the television while you're watching it. So yeah, that's obviously that's the thing that sticks out the most. But again, I've been really impressed with how little he's actually suffered in pure defensive terms for a 17-year-old playing in, let's face it, a Barca team that are not exactly humming at the moment and weren't at the time of his arrival. It was not exactly an easy spot to come into. Xavi did, you know, rotate him out for the game at Napoli when obviously you've got Victor Osimhen up front, and that would have been serious deep end stuff on the defensive side. But apart from that, I think he's been excellent defensively and not really committing fouls, not getting himself into bad situations, just reading things well. So, yeah, Barcelona have got another unbelievable prospect to go along with Yamal, and we'll see a bit more of Fort in coming months, I think.
I think that's what stood out for me anyway. Like, after the game, I wasn't particularly paying attention to Kubarsi during the game, so I went back and watched it after everyone was saying how well he had played, and I just wanted to kind of confirm it and just see what it was that I liked. And it was mostly his anticipation defensively, and that's what Lewandowski was saying. He said, like, look, aside from the ball playing, it defensively he stood out as well. I think that's huge. And he, against a team like Getafe, who are physical and probably are intimidating to play against, he's been just amazing. He has the most completed passes of any defender in La Liga since his debut in January, 505 passes, which is pretty significant for a 17-year-old. Not aside from his ability to find passes, but the responsibility that has been placed on him at the centre of that, it was a back three they played on Saturday in build-up. So, yeah, Mika Marmol is the only defender with more forward passes than Kubarsi in that same period. So it's not just easy passes he's making either. And some of those passes, as we said, against Getafe, breaking lines. He has 505 passes completed of 554. So it's 91% pass completion. And again, a 17 in the center of defense for a team who are in a little bit of turmoil at the moment, or were at least, and they've really straightened themselves out. Not easy to step into that situation, and like you said, he hasn't suffered at all. So yeah, and a really, really exciting one. Next one for our US audience, Johnny Cardoso from Real Betis. He is a signing, and he has been excellent for Real Betis really since he arrived.
I would say it's difficult to pick actually between him and Kubarsi as to who's been the best. We have picked three here, but I think Cardoso and Kubarsi are the two clear two best, with a little bit of a gap to our last one. But yeah, Cardoso, I watched him against Cadiz, must have been a few weeks back now. I think it was his fourth game for Betis. And I just tweeted after the game saying, I've no idea how much this guy is worth, but I know it's a lot more than 8 million that they paid for him. And since then, I've been watching. You never want to go too early on these guys and say they're the, you know, this guy's one of the most well-rounded midfielders in La Liga, because, you know, four games in, no matter how good he looks, you kind of have to hold back a bit. But since then, the levels have just stuck. There's nothing really that there's no one part of his game that he stands out in unbelievably, but he just looks good across the board. It's difficult to see weaknesses in his game. And again, he's only 22. I know we talk about players that are much younger these days, but again, 22 is still very young. So to come into a Betis midfield and basically be the guy since he's arrived, given Guido Rodriguez is injured, he's been seriously impressive.
Again, 22, and I was just looking up some of Opta's player similarity radars, and one player who he was similar to is João Palhinha from Fulham, who has been linked with obviously Bayern last summer, I think it was in the summer, and who has since been linked with Liverpool, Arsenal, huge teams. And to think that Cardoso is performing in that kind of an all-encompassing role. He's just arrived, has never played in Europe before. He's 22. Manuel Pellegrini knows how good he is, because he's a outfield player with the most minutes played for Betis since his debut. He's played 703, so already a main feature in Pellegrini's system and style. So yeah, since his debut on January 21st, Beñat Prados, who I love Beñat Prados for Athletic Bilbao, I think he's unbelievable. Beñat Prados is the only La Liga player averaging more tackles and interceptions per 90 across all competitions than Johnny Cardoso. Beñat Prados has 5.8 and Johnny Cardoso has 5.6. So
it's good for Betis as well, because I'm not sure about you, but I have a hard time seeing Guido sticking around next season. I feel like the cycle's coming to an end there. Pretty sure he's out of contract, and to me, he screams a guy that Atletico will sign. Maybe 2 years past his prime, but again, that's just the type of signing Atletico seem to do these days. But yeah, to get Johnny in beforehand is a lovely bit of business.
Yeah, especially in the January transfer window. You always hear sporting directors, managers talk about how difficult it is to find players who can contribute long term in the January transfer window. It's usually just quick fixes, loans, things like that. But Johnny Card also looks like a player who's going to really contribute. And on Guido, yeah, so he is out of contract, and the Betis sporting director has come out and said that the contract renewal proposal they had has expired. It looks like they've got founder's replacement, and he's going to have to probably head off in the summer. So the final one that we had on this one, we had a few that we will mention now, but Isak Romero from Sevilla, he has the most big chances created in La Liga since his debut on January 12th, and he has scored 3 goals in 7 La Liga games. He could have had another one against Real Madrid, but that save from Lunin, possibly one of the best saves of the season, pure reaction instinct, and yeah, could have given Sevilla the lead in that one. But Romero, 23-year-old, came out of practically nowhere. Again, not a signing, but an arrival. He just was brought up from Sevilla Atletico, and he has... There's a lot of doubt around Sevilla next season, what they're going to do. They've already started to transition away from a lot of their older players. Even Rakitic is gone. Who knows what's going to happen with Jesus Navas, players like that. But it looks like Isak Romero is here for the long haul with Sevilla, and he himself and Youssef En-Nesyri had a really nice connection there together already, and we're pretty bullish on him for the future too.
Yeah, that top stat on big chances created, that was one of those where you'd been watching the games and I just had a feeling that he was going to be well up there for that, because in pretty much every game he's played, I feel like he's laid on at least one good chance for his strike partner. Especially since En-Nesyri got back, he's definitely played him in for some really nice opportunities. And again, it's not as if he's been that involved, really. He's not having a massive amount of touches. They're often playing in transition, and he's at the top end of a team who are defending deep. So he's done a lot with a little, I think, is how I describe it. And yeah, 3 goals as well. Lunin's massive save, the Bernabeu, would have prevented him from going to 4. So the combination of working well with his strike partner, not just chipping in with goals, but actually advancing the play and running counterattacks, he's been superb so far. And yeah, he's the one guy who was Sevilla have really promoted from within since Sanchez Flores came. So yeah, it was a team all along that he'd looked at and thought these guys could probably do with some more academy representation. And Romero is not 23, is actually quite old to come out of the youth team or B team. So yeah, it looks like they've just caught him in time, and that's really good news for them.
Yeah, another couple of players we had on our list, Pablo Fornals, maybe Chimi Avila after his performance against Athletic Bilbao the other day. Maybe he's going to offer something to Real Betis now in moving forward. We also have Vitor Roque, Geraldo Becker for Real Sociedad, who looks really lively, or who has looked really lively. Jorge Martin, Getafe, Yerson Mosquera from Villarreal, 22-year-old defender, and Luca Romero, who is still only 19. He scored 2 goals against Atletico Madrid, and he gave Samuel Lino an awful time at the weekend, and Reynaldo too. So we might as well move into that game now. Almeria 2-2 with Atletico Madrid. 0.48 XG for Almeria, 1.55 for Atletico. Atletico really could have and should have put it to bed and finished it, but Almeria hung in there and got themselves a draw. Another really good result for them. But Opta's predictions give them a 99% chance of being relegated. They're 12 points off Celta Vigo in 18th place, and yeah, they basically have no chance of staying up, or a very, very slim one. But they're not actually as bad as that record suggests.
No, I kind of think the season's been that weird. It wouldn't surprise me if they won 5 in a row at this point. But yeah, I guess we'll dig into the game first of all. Almeria one nil down after 2 minutes, and the thing that stuck out to me with that goal was the fact that the crowd didn't really even react. You know, when you concede that early, or at least from my perception of Spanish football fans, I would expect whistles everywhere, you know, mercenarios and all of that. But it felt like they were just kind of resigned to it, as if, oh, yeah, we knew we were going down anyway. This is just par for the course. So I don't know if there's an element there where everybody's lost hope of doing anything, that they're kind of relaxing into performance now. But yeah, there's also a big aspect of this in that Atletico just didn't take the chances as well. The strange parallel between the home and away form is difficult to describe, but Morata missing those two big chances is a big factor, obviously. But again, yeah, it's a really strange Atletico game, because I thought first 20 minutes it looked like it was going to be a complete walk in the park. And then from there, Luka Romero scores from distance. I don't know how he scored through all those bodies. I'm sure Simeone was furious with that. But then from there, yeah, it felt like Almeria just matched Atletico up. They wanted to be more aggressive. Felt like they didn't have much to lose and took the game to them and bothered Atletico.
I think it was you that tweeted on La Posa Pod a few months ago. Well, it wasn't me, so it had to be you. about this Almeria project being a little bit wild or weird, and there not being too much direction there. You look at their last three managers. So you got Ruby, who was there for a while, brought them up from the Segunda and then got sacked. Vicente Moreno and Gaizka Garitano. Three very different managers. There doesn't seem to be any continuity there in terms of how they play. And then on top of that, you get it's so hard to build a team based off not really having a defined system, style, structure, that you end up with a kind of a hodgepodge of players who, when you look at it now, a fine collection of talent, which I think is why they've been competitive, and their level just doesn't drop below a certain level. It's not like they're getting thumped every single week. But you when you look at their attack right now, and let's presume Luka Romero is going to take a step forward now. He's 19, made his debut at Mallorca back when he was 15, or he was like 11 or something, I think. And he still looks like he's only about 12. But anyway, let's presume he's going to take a step forward now after those two goals and get more minutes for Almeria. You've got himself, you've got Ramazani, you've got Jonathan Vieira, you've got Sergio Arribas. They've got plenty of attacking talent there. They've got Luis Suarez when he comes back. I'm not even entirely sure when he is going to come back from injury, but they do have plenty of talent there. Mark Pubel, the right back who we were impressed with last season. But it just feels like they can't get anything together. Haven't had a stroke of luck at all. The Vicente Moreno sacking felt like it was a little bit premature, in terms of you've got a stat here, their XG difference per game.
Yeah, John may explain it. It's a bit awkward, this one. So for teams who are in the bottom half in La Liga this season, If you to account for managers who were in charge for at least five games on those, there's basically none of those teams and manager combos managed to stay out of the red in terms of XG. So it's hard for those sides to create more than they concede in the long term. But Vicente Moreno was actually one of the very few that managed to do that. So over his seven games, you know, it was 1.7 XG4 and 1.59 XG against, which sounds very marginal. But again, they weren't conceding, you know, much bigger chances than they were creating under him. So when you look back now, and the fact that they only gave him seven matches, it does feel remarkably early to get rid of him and bring in a guy like Gaizka Garitano, because, you know, it's not like you've got an unbelievable coach waiting in the wings to to pick up that job. I think most people would agree Gasca Garitano is, you know, if he's going to be in La Liga, he's going to be managing one of the bottom three. And yeah, it's just, to me, the whole, they just don't make sense, Almeria. They've signed some brilliant young players, and then the managerial appointments tend to underwhelm. And then this season, you know, they've started 31 different players in La Liga this season, which is the most of any team. And if you look back to the first half of the season compared to what they are now, the teams are just, you know, drastically different. There was only four players who played in both games against Atletico this season, and they were like a couple of months apart. So there's been another revolution in this second half of the season. And there's one guy, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Radovanovic, who is starting for Almeria now. I'm just looking at this guy's career. I mean, he's 30 now. Up until joining Almeria, he'd never played in a top-flight European league. He'd played in second division in France. He'd played in Belgium. His last club was Austin FC in the MLS. And I'm thinking, Almeria signed Cesar Montes for 15 million euros this summer. One of the most expensive players signed anywhere in Spain. And now he's sat on the bench behind this guy who is 30 and never played in a top-flight European league. I just can't make sense of a lot of the things this team do.
Yeah, they also sold Sergio Adeyemi, their left back, who played with Barcelona, and he's 26 now. They also lost El Bilal Touré last summer. They sold him for 30 million, give or take, to Atalanta. Yeah, signed Edgar Gonzalez, Luis Suarez. Like you said, it just doesn't make any sense, really. They signed Keiki, the Brazilian centre-back, and sold him. It didn't work out. Yeah, you just wonder exactly what is their plan. Maybe the fans, when you said that the fans didn't react, it's because they're thinking, okay, let's get back down to Segunda and figure this out, because right now we're just nothing. And I suppose when a team gets to that point, it's just like you need a little bit of a cleanse. You need a kind of a purge and figure out just what it is that you're trying to do and go back to down to Segunda and become competitive again, is what they might be thinking. So yeah, just taking a look at their XG in different game states, it looks like a team who are really poor. And when they're drawing, minus 9.4 XG difference is second worst in the league, behind only Las Palmas, who Jamie might bristle at that one now. He might like that. But so, yeah, their XG per 90 when they're drawing, XG difference per 90 when they're drawing is the worst in the league, along with Granada. So, yeah, their XG per 90 when they're winning is minus 0.8, which isn't down at the bottom of the league as well. They're at the bottom of this league. But one of these statistics that actually stands out to me and suggests a team that has better quality than their statistics would suggest and they're underperforming is their XG difference per 90 when they're losing. So basically, the opposition have no real onus to attack, unless you're Real Madrid or Barcelona or Atletico Madrid, we'll say. So you've got the opposition sitting back, and this is, I think, shows just how good or bad a team is in terms of their overall quality when the chains are off and they're just let go. They have 0.2. Their XG difference per 90 then is 0.2, which is better than any of the teams down at the bottom of the league, and is better than a lot of the teams in the middle of the league too. So that's better than Villarreal, it's better than Rayo, it's better than Valencia, it's better than Sevilla, Granada, Cadiz, Las Palmas, Getafe, I think I said. And yeah, so that's a stat that I think shows that when they have nothing else to think about other than just attacking, the quality just jumps off the page, I think.
I do remember, actually, under Vicente Moreno at the start of the season, they went behind in a few games just off ridiculous moments. And when they had to get back in the game, like you said, they actually created a lot of chances and they looked really dynamic. I remember the first game of the season against Rayo, they gave away two penalties in the first half. And from there, you're just thinking, yeah, you know, when you're in charge for seven games, that is a very short amount of time where a lot of things can go wrong and not have the time to correct themselves. But again, yeah, I remember them playing Celta at home as well, where they fell behind, and it was a real shootout, a game they easily could have won. I think they lost it in the end. But yeah, that early part of the season was just full of games like that, where you see when they have to get back in a game, the talent is there for a bottom half side. And even now, you know, they're on to probably like version 12 of their starting 11, and they've got guys like Jonathan Vieira and Luca Romero who've come in and had a good impact at the weekend. So again, it's just, unfortunately, it's probably too late for them to make a real difference now, but you felt like they had the pieces all along. It just, they defended their box awfully at times, where they weren't giving up huge chances but conceding a ton of goals. And yeah, maybe they just gave themselves a bit too much work to do overall.
And then they were impatient with sacking Vicente Moreno, who they got out. That was their first game against Rayo. Two penalties within a half an hour, and you're pretty much gone at that point. So yeah, a little bit kind of trigger happy, getting rid of managers. And they, like the goal, the Luca Romero's second goal against Atletico at the weekend, just excellent from Jonathan Vieira, and an excellent finish from Luca Romero. So as you were saying, that they have the pieces. It's just they've been impatient, a little bit directionless in terms of their squad planning in some ways. And yeah, it's pretty much doomed them now. So we'll post that predicted final league position from the analyst. And yeah, we'll see what you think. So
No, not at the moment. Yeah, we probably could have touched on Atletico a bit, but again, they play in Copa del Rey semi-final on Thursday against Athletic, and very likely big conclusions to be taken after that. Is it the start of the end of their season, or is it, you know, an unbelievable comeback? So yeah, maybe we'll dip into that next week or something. Yeah, anyway, we'll talk about it on Twitter at least.
But yeah, as I said, we'll leave it there from myself and Jamie on this episode of La Posta Pod. It's adios.